smiled. Not wanting the crown means you're probably the best person to have it. I stared at her, convinced by her wide eyes that she believed that without a doubt. I hoped to ask more, but Maxon and August came out of the great room, looking surprisingly calm. A single guard followed at a distance. August was looking at Georgia like it had hurt him to be away from her, even for a few minutes. Maybe that was the only reason she was here today.
Are you okay, America?
Maxon asked. Yes. My ability to look him in the eye had disappeared again.
You should go get ready for the day, he commented. The guards have been sworn to secrecy, and I'd appreciate the same from you.
Of course. He seemed displeased with my coolness, but how else was I supposed to act right now?
Mr. Ilya, it was a pleasure. We'll talk again soon.
Maxon held out his hand. August took it easily.
If there's anything you need, don't hesitate to ask. We truly are on your side, Your Majesty. Thank you. Georgia, let's go. Some of these guards look a little too trigger-happy.
She chuckled. See you around, America. I nodded, sure I'd never see her again, and sad because of it. She walked past Maxon and slid her hand into August's. With a guard in tow, they walked out the gaping doors of the palace, leaving Maxon and me alone in the foyer. His eyes rose to mine. I mumbled something and pointed upstairs, moving as I did so. His quick objection to choosing me only drove home the pain of his words yesterday in the library. I thought after the safe room there was some kind of understanding between us, but it seemed as if everything had gotten even more muddled than it had been when I was still trying to decide how much I liked Maxon in the first place. I didn't know what this meant for us, or if there was still an us worth worrying about. Chapter 7. For as fast as I was at getting to my room, Aspen was faster. I shouldn't have been surprised. Aspen knew the palace so well, this was probably nothing to him now. Hey, I started, a little unsure of what to say. Quickly, he wrapped his arms around me, then pulled away.
That's my girl.
I smiled. Yeah?
You put him in their place, Mare.
Risking his life, Aspen ran a thumb down my cheek.
You do deserve to be happy. We all do.
Thank you. Smiling, he dropped his hand to move the bracelet Maxon had brought me from New Asia, and reached underneath to touch the one I'd made of a button he'd given me. His eyes looked sad as he stared at our little memento.
We'll talk soon. Really talk. There's a lot we need to work out.
With that, Aspen moved down the hall. I sighed and put my head in my hands. Did he assume my rejection meant that I was pushing Maxon away for good? Did he think I wanted to rekindle things with him? Then again, hadn't I just pushed Maxon away? Hadn't I thought yesterday that Aspen needed to stay in my life? So then why did everything feel awful? The mood in the women's room was dark. Queen Amberley sat writing her letters, and from time to time I'd notice her peek up to take in the four of us. After yesterday, we were avoiding doing anything that might require us to interact with one another. Celeste had a pile of magazines and was stretched out on the couch. In a very wise move, Chris had taken her journal and settled in to write, once again positioning herself near the Queen. Why hadn't I thought of that? Elise had gotten out a collection of drawing pencils and was working on something by the window. I was in a wide chair near the door reading a book. As it was, we didn't even have to make eye contact. I tried to concentrate on the words in front of me, but mostly I wondered who the Northern rebels wanted as princess if they couldn't have me. Celeste was very popular, and it would be easy to get people to follow her. I wondered if they were aware of how manipulative she could be. If they knew things about me, maybe they did. Was there more to Celeste than I guessed? Chris was sweet, and according to that poll a while back, she was one of the people's favorites. Her family didn't have much sway, but she was more of a princess than the rest of us. She had that air about her. Maybe that was her big draw. She wasn't perfect, but she was so lovable. There were days when even I wanted to follow Chris. The one I suspected the least was Elise. She'd admitted she didn't love Maxon, and that she was here because of duty. I genuinely thought that when she spoke of duty, she meant to her family or to her new Asian roots, not to the Northern rebels. Besides that, she was so stoic and calm. There was nothing close to rebellious about her. And that was why I was suddenly positive she was their favorite. She seemed to be trying the least to compete, and had openly admitted her coolness toward Maxon. Maybe she didn't have to try, because at the end of the day, she had a quiet army of supporters to put her under the crown anyway. "That's it," the queen said suddenly. "All of you, come here." She pushed her little table away and stood as we all walked over nervously. "Something's wrong. What is it?" she demanded. We looked at one another, none of us wanting to explain. Finally, Too Perfect Chris piped up. "Your Majesty, we've just suddenly realized how intense this competition is. We're a bit more aware of where we each stand with the prince, and it's difficult to let it sink in and still want to chat right now." The queen nodded in understanding. "How often do you all think of Natalie?" she asked. Natalie had been gone barely a week. I thought of her nearly every day. I also thought of Marley all the time, and some of the other girls would pop into my head at random as well. "Always," Elise said quietly. "She was so light-hearted." A smile came to her lips as she said this. I had always assumed that Natalie got on Elise's nerves, since she was so reserved and Natalie was so spacey. But maybe it was one of those opposites attract kinds of friendships. "Sometimes she would laugh over the littlest thing," Chris added. "It was contagious." "Exactly," the queen said. "I've been where you are, and I know how difficult it is. You second-guess the things you do. You second-guess everything he does. You wonder over every conversation, trying to read into the breaths between sentences. It's exhausting." It was as though I could see a weight lifting from everyone. Someone got us. "But know this. As much tension as you feel with one another now, you will ache every time one of you leaves. No one will ever understand this experience like the other girls who have been through it, the elite especially. You may fight, but that's what sisters do. These girls," she said, pointing to each of us, "will be the ones you call nearly every day for the first year, terrified of making a mistake and needing their support. When you have parties, these are the names you'll put at the top of your guest lists, just under the names of your family members. Because that's what you are now. You'll never lose these relationships." We looked at one another. If I was the princess and something was happening where I needed a rational perspective, I'd call Elise first. If I was fighting with Maxon, Chris would remind me of every good thing about him. And Celeste? Well, I wasn't so sure, but if anyone was going to tell me to toughen up about something, it would be her. "So take your time," she advised. "Adjust to where you are, and let it go. You don't choose him, he chooses you. There's no point in hating the others for that." "Do you know who he wants the most?" Celeste asked, and for the first time I heard worry in her voice. "I don't," Queen Amberlee confessed. "Sometimes I think I could guess, but I don't pretend to understand everything Maxon feels. I know who the king would choose, but that's about it." "Who would you choose?" I asked, then cursed myself for being so blunt. She smiled kindly. "I honestly haven't let myself think about it. It would break my heart to start loving one of you like a daughter and then lose you. I couldn't bear it." I lowered my eyes, not sure if those words were meant to be a comfort or not. "I will say I'd be happy to have any one of you in my family." I looked up and watched as she took the time to meet each set of eyes. "For now, there's work to do." We stood there silently, soaking in her wisdom. I'd never taken the time to look at the competitors in the last selection, to find their pictures or anything. I knew a handful of names, mostly because older women would drop them into conversations when I sang at parties. It was never that important to me. We already had a queen, and even as a girl, the possibility of becoming a princess never crossed my mind. But now, I wondered how many of the women who showed up to visit the queen or came for Halloween were her former competition, now her closest friends. Celeste walked away first, heading back to the comfort of the couch. It didn't seem as if Queen Amberlee's words meant much to her. For some reason, that was the tipping point for me. Everything from the last few days crashed back onto my heart, and I could feel it was seconds away from cracking. I curtsied. "Excuse me, please," I mumbled before moving swiftly to the door. I didn't have a plan. Maybe I could go sit in the bathroom for a minute, or tuck myself away in one of the numerous parlors downstairs. Maybe I would just go to my room and cry my eyes out. Unfortunately, it looked like the universe was plotting against me. Just outside the women's room, Maxim was pacing back and forth, looking as if he was trying to solve a riddle. Before I could hide somewhere, he saw me. Of everything I wanted to do right now, this was the last thing on my list.
"I was debating asking you to come out," he said.
"What do you need?" I answered shortly. Maxim stood there, still working up the nerve to say something that was obviously driving him crazy.
"So there's one girl who loves me beyond reason?"
I crossed my arms. After the last few days, I should have seen his change of heart coming. "Yes."
"Not two?"
I looked up at him, almost irritated that he needed me to explain. "Don't you already know how I feel?" I wanted to scream. "Don't you remember the safe room?" But honestly, I needed some confirmation right now, too. What had happened to make me so unsure so quickly? The king. His insinuations about what the other girls had done, his praise of their merits, made me feel small. And it was compounded by all my missteps with Maxim this week. The only way we would have ever been brought together was because of the selection, but it seemed that as long as it went on, there was no way for anything to feel certain. "You told me you didn't trust me," I accused. "The other day you made a point of humiliating me, and yesterday you basically said I was an embarrassment. And not a few hours ago, the suggestion of marrying me sent you into a rage. Forgive me for not feeling so secure in our relationship right now."
"You forget that I've never done this, America," he said passionately, but without any anger. "You have someone to compare me to. I don't even know how to have a typical relationship, and I only get one chance. You've had at least two. I'm going to make mistakes."
"I don't mind mistakes," I shot back. "I mind the uncertainty. Most of the time I can't tell what's going on." He was quiet for a moment, and I realized that we'd come to a very serious crossroad. We'd implied so many things, but we couldn't go on like this for much longer. Even if we ended up together, these moments of insecurity would haunt us. "We keep doing this," I breathed, exhausted with this game. "We get close, and then something happens and it falls apart, and you never seem to be able to make a decision. If you want me as much as you've always claimed to, why isn't this over?" Even though I'd accused him of not caring about me at all, his frustration melted into sadness.
"Because half the time, I've been sure you loved someone else, and the other half I've doubted you could love me at all," he answered, making me feel positively awful.
"Like I haven't had my own reasons to doubt. You treat Chris like she's heaven on earth, and then I catch you with Celeste."
"I explained that."
"Yes, but it still hurt to see."
"Well, it hurts me to see how quickly you shut down. Where does that even come from?"
"I don't know, but maybe you should stop thinking about me for a while." The silence was abrupt.
"What does that mean?"
I shrugged. "There are three other girls here. If you're so worried about your one shot, you might want to make sure you're not wasting it on me." I walked away, angry with Maxim for making me feel this way, and angry with myself for making things so much worse. Chapter 8. I watched as the palace was transformed. Almost overnight, lush Christmas trees lined the hallways of the first floor, garlands were strung down the stairways, and all the floral arrangements were changed to include holly or mistletoe. The strange thing was, if I opened my window, it still felt like the edge of summer outside. I wondered if the palace could somehow manufacture snow. Maybe if I asked Maxim, he'd look into it. Then again, maybe not. Days passed. I tried not to be upset that Maxim was doing exactly what I'd asked, but as the space between us grew icy, I regretted my pride. I wondered if this was always bound to happen. Was I destined to say the wrong thing, make the wrong choice? Even if Maxim was what I wanted, I was never going to get myself together long enough for it to be real. The whole thing just felt tired. It was the same problem I'd been facing since Aspen walked through the doorway of the palace. And I ached from it, from feeling so torn, so confused. I'd taken to walking around the palace during the afternoons. With the gardens off limits, the women's room day after day was too confining. It was while I was walking that I felt the shift, as if some unseen trigger had set off everyone in the palace. The guards stood a bit stiller, and the maids walked a bit faster. Even I felt strange, like I wasn't quite so welcome here as I was only moments ago. Before I knew what it was I was feeling, the king rounded the corner, a small entourage behind him. Then it all made perfect sense. His absence made the palace warmer, and now that he was home, we were all subject to his whims again. No wonder the northern rebels were excited about Maxon. I curtsied as the king approached. While he walked, he put up a hand, and the men behind him paused as he came close, leaving us with a small bubble of space in which to speak.
"Lady America, I see you're still here," he said, his smile and his words at odds with each other.
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"And how have you been in my absence?"
I smiled. "Silent."
"That's a good girl."
He started to walk away, but then remembered something and came back.
"It was brought to my attention that of the girls left, you're the only one still receiving money for your participation. Elise gave hers up voluntarily almost immediately after the payments were stopped for the twos and threes."
That didn't surprise me. Elise was a four, but her family owned high-end hotels. They weren't hurting for money the way the shopkeepers back in Carolina were.
"I think that should end,"
he announced, snapping me back into the moment. My face fell.
"Unless, of course, you're here for a payout, and not because you love my son."
His eyes burned into me, daring me to challenge his decision. "You're right," I said, hating the way the words felt in my mouth. "It's only fair." I could see he was disappointed not to get more of a fight.
"I'll see to it immediately."
He walked away, and I stood there, trying not to feel sorry for myself. Really, it was fair. How did it look that I was the only one getting checks? It would all end eventually anyway. Sighing, I headed toward my room. The least I could do was write home and warn them that the money wouldn't be coming anymore. I opened my door, and for the first time I was completely ignored by my maids. Anne, Mary, and Lucy were in the back corner, hovering over a dress that they appeared to be working on, bickering about their progress.
"Lucy, you said you were going to finish this hem last night," Anne said. "You left early to do it."
"I know, I know. I got sidetracked. I can do it now."
Her eyes were pleading. Lucy was already a bit sensitive, and I knew Anne's rigid manner sometimes got to her.
"You've been getting sidetracked an awful lot these last few days," Anne commented.
Mary held out her hands.
"Calm down. Give me the dress before you mess it up."
"I'm sorry," Lucy said. "Just let me take it now and I'll get it done."
"What's going on with you?" Anne demanded. "You've been acting so funny."
Lucy looked up at her, eyes frozen. Whatever her secret was, she looked terrified to share it. I cleared my throat. They whipped their heads in my direction, all curtsying in turn.
"I don't know what's going on," I said as I walked toward them, "but I highly doubt the Queen's maids argue like that. Besides, we're wasting time if there's work to be done."
Anne, still angry, pointed her finger at Lucy.
"But she..."
I silenced her with a small gesture of my hand, a bit surprised that it worked so easily.
"No arguing. Lucy, why don't you take that down to the workroom to finish, and we can all get some room to think."
Lucy happily scooped up the fabric, so grateful for the means to escape that she practically ran from the room. Anne watched her go, a full pout on her face. Mary looked worried,
but dutifully went to work without another word. It took all of 2 minutes for me to realize that the mood in my room was too dreary for me to focus. I grabbed some paper and a pen and headed back downstairs. I wondered if I'd done the right thing, sparing Lucy. Maybe they'd all be fine if I'd let them air out whatever was happening. Perhaps my meddling would shake their resolve in helping me. I'd never really bossed them around like that before. I paused outside the women's room. That didn't feel like the right place either. I moved down the main hallway, finding a little nook with a bench. That seemed nice. I ran into the library and picked up a book to lean on and went back to the nook, finding myself practically hidden by the large plant beside the bench. The wide window looked into the garden, and for a minute the palace didn't seem so small. I watched birds fly outside the window and tried to form the kindest way to tell my parents there wouldn't be any more checks. Maxon, can't we go on a real date, somewhere outside the palace? I recognized Chris's voice immediately. The women's room might not have been so full after all. I could hear the smile in his voice as he answered.
I wish we could, sweetheart, but even if things were calm, that would be difficult.
I want to see you somewhere where you're not the prince, she whined lovingly.
Ah, but I'm the prince everywhere.
You know what I mean.
I do. I'm sorry I can't give that to you, really. I think it would be nice to see you somewhere where you weren't an elite. But this is the life I live.
His voice grew a little sad.
Would you regret it?
He asked.
For the rest of your life, it would be like this. Beautiful walls, but walls all the same. My mother scarcely leaves the palace more than once or twice a year.
Through the thick leaves of the planted shrub, I watched as they passed me, completely unaware.
And if you think the public is intrusive now, it would be much worse when you're the only girl they're watching. I know your feelings for me run deep. I feel it every day. But what about the life that comes along with me? Do you want that?
It seemed as if they'd stopped somewhere in the hallway, as Maxon's voice wasn't fading. Maxon Shreve, Chris started. You make it sound like it's a sacrifice for me to be here. Each day I'm thankful for being chosen. Sometimes I try to imagine what it would have been like if we'd never met. I'd rather lose you now than have gone a lifetime without this. Her voice was getting thick. I didn't think she was crying, but she was close. I need you to know that I'd want you without the beautiful clothes and the gorgeous rooms. I'd want you without the crown, Maxon. I just want you. Maxon was momentarily speechless, and I could imagine him holding her close or wiping away the tears that might have come by now.
I can't tell you what it means to me to hear that. I've been dying for someone to tell me that I was what mattered, he confessed quietly.
You are, Maxon. There was another quiet moment between them. Maxon?
Yes?
I don't think I want to wait anymore. Even though I knew I'd regret it, at those words I silently put down my paper and pen, slipped off my shoes, and scurried to the end of the hall. I peeked around and saw the back of Maxon's head as Chris's hand slid just barely into the neck of his suit. Her hair fell to the side as they kissed, and for her first, it seemed like it was going really well. Better than Maxon's, that was for sure. I ducked back around the corner and heard her giggle a second later. Maxon let out a sigh that was half triumph and half relief. I walked to my seat quickly, angling myself toward the window again just in case. When can we do that again? She asked quietly.
How about in as much time as it takes to get from here to your room?
Chris's laugh faded as they moved down the hallway. I sat there for a minute. Then I picked up my pen and paper, finding the words easily now. Mom and Dad, there's so much to do these days, I have to keep this short. In an effort to show my devotion to Maxon and not to the luxuries of being in the elite, I've given up receiving payments for my participation. I realize this is short notice, but I'm sure with everything we've been given by now, there's not much more we could want for. I hope you won't be too disappointed by this news. I miss you, and hope we'll get to see each other again soon. I love you all.
America.
Chapter 9. The report was lacking material, following what the public would see as a rather uneventful week. After the brief updates from the king on his visit to France, the floor was turned over to Gavril, who was now interviewing the remaining elite in a casual manner about things that didn't seem to matter at this point in the competition. Then again, the last time they'd asked us about something that did matter, I suggested dissolving the castes and nearly got thrown out of the competition.
"Lady Celeste, have you seen the princess's suite?"
Gavril asked jovially. I grinned to myself, grateful he didn't ask me the same question. Celeste's perfect smile managed to widen, and she flipped her hair over her shoulder playfully before answering.
"Well, Gavril, not yet, but I'm certainly hoping to earn the privilege. Of course, King Clarkson has provided us with the most beautiful accommodations. I can't imagine anything better than what we already have. The beds are so..."
Celeste stammered just a bit, as her eyes caught two guards rushing into the studio. Our seats were arranged in such a way that I could see them as they ran to the king, but Chris and Elise had their backs to the action. They both tried to turn their heads discreetly, but it did them no good.
"Luxurious, and it would be more than I could dream of, too," Celeste continued, not totally focused on her answer. But it appeared she didn't need to be. The king stood and came over, cutting her off.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for the interruption, but this is very urgent."
He clutched a piece of paper in one hand as he smoothed his tie with the other. He was composed as he spoke.
"Since our country's birth, the rebel forces have been the bane of our society. Over the years, their means of attacking the palace, not to mention the common man, have become far more aggressive. It appears they have sunk to new lows. As you may well know, the four remaining young ladies of the selection represent a wide range of castes. We have a 2, a 3, a 4, and a 5. We're honored to have such a varied group, but this has given a strange incentive to the rebels."
The king looked over his shoulder at us before continuing.
"We are prepared for attacks on the palace, and when the rebels attack the public, we intercede as best we can. And I would not worry you if I thought that I, as your king, could protect you. But the rebels are attacking by caste."
The words hung in the air. In an almost friendly gesture, Celeste and I shared a confused glance.
"They have wanted to end the monarchy for a long time. Recent attacks on the families of these young girls have shown the lengths that they're prepared to go to, and we've sent guards from the palace to protect the elite's loved ones. But now, that is not enough. If you are a 2, 3, 4, or 5, that is, in the same caste as any of these ladies, you may be subject to an attack from the rebels, based on that fact alone."
I covered my mouth and heard Celeste suck in a breath.
"Beginning today, the rebels intend to attack 2s and work their way down the castes,"
the king added solemnly. It was sinister. If they couldn't get us to abandon the selection for our families, they would get a very large portion of the country to want us out. The longer we held on, the more the people would hate us for risking their lives.
"That is sad news indeed, my king,"
Gavril said, breaking the silence. The king nodded.
"We will seek a solution, of course. But we have reports of 8 attacks today in 5 different provinces, all of them against 2s, and all of them resulting in at least 1 death."
The hand that had been frozen over my mouth dropped to my heart. People had died today at our expense.
"For now," King Clarkson continued, "we encourage you to stay close to home and to take any security measures possible." "Excellent advice, my king," Gavril said.
He turned to us.
"Ladies, anything you'd like to add?"
Elise merely shook her head. Chris took a deep breath. "I know that 2s and 3s are being targeted, but your homes are safer than most of the ones for lower castes. If you can take in a family of 4s or 5s that you know well, I think that would be a good idea."
Celeste nodded. "Stay safe. Do what the king says."
She turned to me, and I realized I needed to say something. When I was on the report and feeling a bit lost, I tended to look to Maxon, as if he could silently give me advice. Falling into that habit, I searched for his eyes. But all I saw was his blonde hair as he stared into his lap, his dejected frown the only thing visible. Of course he was worried about his people, but this was about more than protecting his citizens. He knew we might leave. And shouldn't we? How many Fives could lose their lives because I sat on my stool in the bright lights of the palace studio? But how could I or any of the girls shoulder that burden? We weren't the ones taking their lives. I remembered everything August and Georgia said to us, and I knew there was only one thing we could do. Fight, I said to no one in particular. Then, remembering where I was, I turned to the camera. Fight. The rebels are bullies. They're trying to scare you into doing what they want. And what if you do? What kind of future do you think they'll offer you? These people, these tyrants, aren't going to suddenly stop being violent. If you give them power, they're going to be 1,000 times worse. So fight. However you can, fight. I felt blood and adrenaline pulsing through me, like I was ready to attack the rebels myself. I'd had enough. They'd kept us all in terror, victimized our families. If one of those southern rebels was in front of me right now, I wouldn't run. Gavril started speaking again, but I was so angry all I could hear was my heart beating in my ears. Before I knew it, the cameras were off and the lights were powering down. Maxon went over to his father and whispered something, to which the king shook his head. The girls stood and started to leave.
Go straight to your rooms, Maxon said gently. Dinner will be brought up, and I'll be visiting you all soon.
As I walked past them, the king put a single finger on my arm, and in that small gesture I knew he meant for me to stop.
That wasn't very smart, he said.
I shrugged. What we're doing isn't working. Keep this up, and you won't have anyone left to rule over. He flicked his hand, dismissing me, fed up with me again. Maxon quietly knocked on my door, letting himself in. I was already in my nightgown, reading in my bed. I'd begun to wonder if he was going to come at all. It's so late, I whispered, though there was no one to disturb.
I know. I had to speak with all the others, and it's been extremely taxing. Elise was very shaken. She's feeling particularly guilty. I wouldn't be surprised if she left in the next day or two.
Even though he'd expressed his lackluster feelings for Elise more than once, I could see just how much this hurt him. I curled my legs to my chest so he could sit. What about Chris and Celeste?
Chris is almost too optimistic. She's sure that people will be careful and protect themselves. I don't see how that's possible, if there's no way to tell when or where the rebels will attack next. They're all over the country. But she's hopeful, you know how she is.
Yeah. He sighed.
Celeste is fine. She's concerned, of course. But as Chris pointed out, the twos are most likely to be the safest during all this. And she's always so determined.
He laughed to himself, staring at the floor.
Mostly she seemed concerned that I would be upset with her if she stayed. As if I could hold it against her for choosing this over going home.
I sighed. It's a good point. Do you want a wife who isn't worried about her subjects being threatened? Maxon looked at me.
You're worried. You're just too smart to be worried the way everyone else is.
He shook his head and smiled.
I can't believe you told them to fight.
I shrugged. It seems like we do a whole lot of cowering.
You're absolutely right. And I don't know if that will scare the rebels off or make them more determined, but there's no doubt you changed the game.
I cocked my head. I don't think I'd call a group of people trying to kill the population at random a game.
No, no, he said quickly. I can't think of a word bad enough to call that. I meant the selection.
I stared at him.
For better or worse, the public got a real glimpse into your character tonight. They can see the girl who drags her maids to safety, who stands up to kings if she thinks she's right. I'll bet everyone will look at you running after Marley in an entirely different light now. Before this, you were just the girl who yelled at me when we met. Tonight, you became the girl who's not afraid of the rebels. They'll think of you differently now.
I shook my head. That's not what I was trying to do.
I know. For all the planning I was doing to get you to show the people who you are, it turns out you just do it on an impulse. It's so you.
There was a look of astonishment in his eyes, as if he should have been expecting this all along.
Anyway, I think it was the right thing to say. It's about time we did more than hide.
I looked down at my bedspread, tracing the seams with my finger. I was glad he approved, but the way he spoke, as if it was one more of my little quirks, felt too intimate at the moment.
I'm tired of fighting with you, America, he said quietly.
I looked up and saw the sincerity in Maxon's eyes as he continued.
I like that we disagree. It's one of my favorite things about you, actually. But I don't want to argue anymore. Sometimes I have a bit of my father's temper. I fight it, but it's there. And you, he said with a laugh, when you're upset, you're a force.
He shook his head, probably remembering a dozen things at the same time I did. A knee to the groin, the whole thing with the casts, Celeste's busted lip when she talked about Marley. I'd never thought of myself as temperamental, but apparently I was. He smiled, and I did too. It was kind of funny when I thought about all my actions piled up like that.
I'm looking at the others, and I'm being fair. It makes me nervous to feel some of the things I do. But I want you to know, I'm still looking at you too. I think you know by now I can't help it.
He shrugged, seeming so boyish at that moment. I wanted to say the right thing, to let him know that I still wanted him to look at me. But nothing felt right, so I slid my hand into his. We sat there quietly, looking at our hands. He toyed with my two bracelets, seeming very concerned with them, and spent a little while rubbing the back of my hand with his thumb. It was nice to have a still moment, just the two of us.
Why don't we spend the day together tomorrow?
He asked. I smiled. I'd like that.
Chapter 10.
So, long story short, more guards?
Yeah, Dad, lots more. I laughed into the phone, though the situation was hardly a funny one. But Dad had a way of making the toughest things light. We're all staying, for now anyway. And even though they say they're starting with twos, don't let anyone be careless. Warn the Turners and the Canvases to stay safe.
Aw, kitten, everyone knows to be careful. After what you said on the report, I think people will be braver than you'd guess.
I hope so. I looked down at my shoes and had a funny flashback. Right now my feet were covered with jeweled heels. 5 months ago they were wearing dingy flats.
You made me proud, America. Sometimes I'm surprised at the things you say, but I don't know why. You were always stronger than you knew.
Something about his voice then was so genuine that I was humbled. No one's opinion of me mattered as much as his. Thanks, Dad.
I'm serious now. Not every princess would say something like that.
I rolled my eyes. Dad, I'm not a princess.
Matter of time, he shot back playfully. Speaking of which, how is Maxon?
Good, I said, fidgeting with my dress. The silence grew. I really like him, Dad.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why, exactly?
I thought for a minute. I'm not really sure, but part of it is that he makes me feel like me, I think.
Do you ever feel like not you? Dad joked.
No, it's like, I've always been aware of my number. Even when I came to the palace, I obsessed about it for a while. Was I a 5 or a 3? Did I want to be a 1? But now I'm not conscious of it at all. And I think it's because of him. He screws up a lot, don't get me wrong, Dad chuckled. But when I'm with him, I feel like I'm America. I'm not a cast or a project. I don't even think of him as elevated, really. He's just him, and I'm just me. Dad was quiet for a moment.
That sounds really nice, kitten.
Boy talk with my dad was always a little awkward, but he was the only one back home who I thought saw Maxon more like a person than a celebrity. No one else would get it like he would. Yeah, it's not perfect, though, I added as Sylvia poked her head in the doorway. I feel like there's always something going wrong. She gave me a pointed look and mouthed, "Breakfast." I nodded.
"Well, that's okay, too. Mistakes mean it's real."
"I'll try to remember that. Listen, Dad, I've got to go. I'm late."
"Can't have that. Take care, kitten, and write your sister soon."
"I will. Love you, Daddy."
"Love you."
As the girls exited after breakfast, Maxon and I lingered in the dining room. The queen passed, winking in my direction, and I felt my cheeks redden. But the king came along soon after, and the look in his eyes took away any lingering blush. Once we were alone, Maxon walked over to me and laced his fingers through mine.
"I'd ask what you want to do today, but our options are pretty limited. No archery, no hunting, no riding, no anything outside."
I sighed. "Not even if we took a slew of guards?"
"I'm sorry, America."
He gave me a sad smile.
"But what about a movie? We can watch something with spectacular scenery."
"It's not the same." I pulled on his arm. "Come on, let's go make the best of it."
"That's the spirit," he said.
Something about that actually made me feel better, like we were in this together. It had been a while since it really felt that way. We went into the hallway and were headed toward the stairway to the theater when I heard the musical clinks on the window. I turned my head to the sound and gasped in wonder. "It's raining." I let go of Maxon's arm and pressed my hand against the glass. In the months I'd been at the palace, it had yet to rain, and I'd wondered if it ever would. Now that I could see it, I realized I missed it. I missed the ebb and flow of seasons, the way things changed. "It's so beautiful," I whispered. Maxon stood behind me, wrapping an arm around my waist.
"Leave it to you to find beauty in something others would say ruins a day."
"I wish I could touch it," he sighed.
"I know you do, but it's just not."
I turned to Maxon, trying to see why he cut himself off. He looked up and down the hall, and I did the same. Besides a couple of guards, we were alone.
"Come on," he said, grabbing my hand. "Let's hope we're not seen."
I smiled, ready for whatever adventure he had in mind. I loved when Maxon was like this. We wound our way up the stairs, heading for the fourth floor. For a moment, I got nervous, worried he'd show me something similar to the hidden library. That hadn't turned out so well for me. We walked down to the middle of the floor, passing one guard on his rounds, but no one else. Maxon pulled me into a large parlor and steered me to the wall next to a wide, dormant fireplace. He reached inside the lip of the fireplace and, sure enough, found a hidden latch. He pushed open a panel in the wall, and it led to yet another secret stairwell.
"Hold my hand," he said, stretching his out to me.
I did so, following him up the dimly lit steps until we came to a door. Maxon undid the simple lock, pulled open the door, and there was a wall of rain. "The roof?" I asked over the sound. He nodded. There were walls surrounding the entrance, leaving an open space about as large as my bedroom to walk on. It didn't matter that all I could see were walls and sky. At least I was outside. Positively beside myself, I stepped forward, reaching into the water. The drops were fat and warm as they collected on my arm and ran down to my dress. I heard Maxon laugh once before shoving me out into the downpour. I gasped, soaked in seconds. Turning around, I grabbed his arm, and he smiled as he pretended to fight. His hair fell in strands around his eyes as we were both quickly drenched, and he was still grinning as he pulled me over to the edge of the wall.
"Look," he said into my ear.
I turned, noticing our view for the first time. I stared in awe as the city spread out in front of me. The web of streets, the geometry of buildings, the array of colors. Even dimmed in the gray hue of rain, it was breathtaking. I found myself feeling attached to it all, as if it belonged to me somehow.
"I don't want the rebels to take it, America," he said over the rain, as if he was reading my mind. "I don't know how bad the death toll is, but I can tell that my father is keeping it a secret from me. He's afraid I'll call off this election."
"Is there a way to find out the truth?" He debated.
"I feel like if I could get in touch with August, he'd know. I could get a letter to him, but I'm afraid of putting too much in writing. and I don't know if I could get him into the palace.
I considered that. What if we could get to him?
Maxon laughed. How do you suggest we do that?
I shrugged playfully. I'll work on it. He stared at me quiet for a minute.
It's nice to say things out loud. I'm always watching what I say. I feel like no one can hear me up here, I guess, just you.
Then go ahead and say anything, he smirked.
Only if you will.
Fine, I answered, happy to play along.
Well, what do you want to know?
I wiped the wet hair from my forehead, starting with something important but impersonal. Did you really not know about the diaries?
No, but I'm up to speed now. Father made me read them all. If August had come 2 weeks ago, I would have thought he was lying about everything, but not anymore. It's shocking, America. You only scratched the surface with what you read. I want to tell you about it, but I can't yet.
I understand. He stared me down, determined.
How did the girls find out about you taking off my shirt?
I looked at the ground, hesitating. We were watching the guards work out. I said you looked as good as any of them without your shirt on. It slipped out. Maxon threw back his head and laughed.
I can't be mad about that.
I smiled. Have you ever brought anyone else up here? He looked sad.
Olivia, one time and that's it.
I actually remembered that, come to think of it. He kissed her up here, and she told us all about it.
I kissed Chris,
he blurted out, not looking at me.
Recently, for the first time. It seems only right that you should know.
He peeked down, and I gave him a small nod. If I hadn't seen them kiss myself, if this had been how I found out, I might have broken down. And even though I already knew, it hurt to hear him say it. I hate dating you this way. I fidgeted, my dress getting heavy with water.
I know. It's just how it is.
Doesn't make it fair. He laughed.
When has anything in either of our lives ever been fair?
I gave him that. I'm not supposed to tell you, and if you let on that you know, he'll get worse, I'm sure. But your father's been saying things to me. He also took away the payments for my family. None of the other girls has them anymore, so I guess it looked bad anyway.
I'm sorry,
he said. He looked out over the city. I was temporarily distracted by the way his shirt was sticking to his chest.
I don't think there's a way to undo that one, America.
You don't have to. I just wanted you to know it was happening, and I can handle it.
You're too tough for him. He doesn't understand you.
He reached down for my hand, and I gave it to him freely. I tried to think of anything else I might want to know, but it mostly pertained to the other girls, and I didn't want to bother with that. I was sure at this point I could guess close enough to the truth, and if I was wrong, I didn't think I wanted that to ruin this. Maxon looked down at my wrist.
Do you?
He looked up at me, seeming to rethink his question.
Do you want to dance?
I nodded. But I'm awful.
We'll go slow.
Maxon pulled me close, placing a hand on my waist. I put one hand in his and used the other to pick up my soaking dress. We swayed, barely moving. I settled my cheek on Maxon's chest. He rested his chin on my head, and we spun to the music of the rain. As he made his grip on me a little bit tighter, it felt like all the bad had been erased, and Maxon and I were stripped to the core of our relationship. We were friends who realized they didn't want to be without each other. We were the other's opposite in many ways, but also so very similar. I couldn't call our relationship fate, but it did seem bigger than anything I'd known before. I raised my face to Maxon's, placing a hand on his cheek, pulling him down for a kiss. His lips, wet, met mine with a brush of heat. I felt both his hands wrap around my back, holding me to him as if he'd fall apart otherwise. While the rain pummeled the roof, the whole world went silent. It felt like there wasn't enough of him, not enough skin or space or time. After all these months of trying to reconcile what I wanted and hoped for, I realized then in this moment Maxon created just for us, that it would never make sense. All I could do was move forward and hope that whenever we drifted, we would somehow find a way back to each other. And we had to, because... For as long as it took to get to this moment, when it came, it was fast. I loved Maxon. For the first time, I could feel it solidly. I wasn't keeping the feeling at a distance, holding on to Aspen and all the what-ifs that went along with him. I wasn't walking into Maxon's affections while keeping one foot out the door in case he let me down. I simply let it come. I loved him. I couldn't pinpoint what made me so certain, but I knew it then, as surely as I knew my name or the color of the sky or any fact written in a book. Could he feel it too? Maxon broke the kiss and looked at me.
You're so pretty when you're a mess.
I laughed nervously. Thank you. For that and for the rain. And for not giving up. He ran his fingers along my cheek and nose and chin.
You're worth it. I don't think you get that. You're worth it to me.
I felt as if my heart was on the edge of bursting, and I just wanted everything to end today. My world had settled onto a new axis, and it felt like the only way to handle how dizzy it made me was for us to finally be real. I felt certain now that it would come. It would have to. Soon. Maxon kissed the tip of my nose.
Let's go get dry and watch a movie.
Sounds good. I carefully tucked my love for Maxon away in my heart, a little afraid of this feeling. Eventually, it would have to be shared, but for now, it was my secret. I tried to wring out my dress in the little canopy where the door was, but it was hopeless. I was going to leave a little trail of water back to my room. I vote for a comedy, I said as we went down the stairs, Maxon leading the way.
I vote for action.
Well, you just said I was worth it, so I think I'm going to win this one. Maxon laughed.
Nicely done.
He chuckled again as he pushed on the panel that led us back into the parlor, only to stop dead in his tracks a second later. I peeked over his shoulder to see King Clarkson standing there, looking as irritated as ever.
I'm assuming this was your idea?
He said to Maxon.
Yes. Do you have any idea how much danger you put yourself in?
He demanded.
Father, there are no rebels waiting on the roof,
Maxon countered, trying to sound rational, but looking a bit ridiculous in his dripping clothes.
One well-aimed bullet is all it would take, Maxon.
He let the words hang in the air.
You know we're stretched tight, sending guards to watch the girls' homes, and dozens of those who've been sent have gone AWOL. We're vulnerable.
He glared past his son at me.
And why is it that when anything happens these days, she's got her hands all over it?
We stood there, silent, knowing there was nothing we could say anyway.
Get cleaned up, the king ordered. You have work to do. But I...
A single look from his father told Maxon that any plans he'd had for the day were done.
Very well, he said, caving.
King Clarkson took Maxon's arm and pushed him away, leaving me behind. Over his shoulder, Maxon mouthed the word, sorry, and I gave him a little smile. I wasn't afraid of the king, or the rebels. I knew how much Maxon meant to me, and I was sure that it was all going to work, somehow. Chapter 11. After enduring Mary's silent smirk as she made me back up, I went to the women's room, happy the rain was still coming down. It would always mean something special to me now. But while Maxon and I could escape for a little while, once we were out of our bubble, the tension of the ultimatum the rebels had placed on the elite was thick. All the girls were distracted and anxious. Celeste wordlessly painted her nails at a nearby table, and I could see the slight tremor in her hand from time to time. I watched as she cleaned up her mistakes and tried to carry on. Elise held a book in her hands, but her eyes were trained on the window, lost in the downpour. None of us could quite manage to finish even the smallest task. How do you think it's going out there? Chris asked me. Her hand paused over the needlepoint pillow she was working on.
I don't know, I answered quietly. It doesn't seem like they'd threaten something huge and then do nothing.
I was penciling out a melody I'd had in my head on some sheet music. I hadn't written anything original in nearly 6 months. There wasn't much point to it. At parties, people preferred the classics.
Do you think they're hiding the number of deaths from us? She wondered.
It's possible. If we leave, they win.
Chris did another stitch. I'm going to stay, no matter what.
Something about the way she said it seemed to be directed specifically at me. Like I needed to know she wasn't giving up on Maxon.
Same here, I promised.
The next day was much of the same, though I'd never been disappointed to see the sunshine before. The worry was so heavy that it was all we could do to stay put. I ached to run, to put some of the energy into something. After lunch, our return to the women's room was staggered. Elise was reading as I sat with my sheet music, but Chris and Celeste were missing. Maybe 10 minutes later, Chris walked in with full arms. She sat down with drawing paper and a collection of colored pencils.
What are you working on? I asked.
She shrugged.
Whatever keeps me busy.
She sat for a long time with a red pencil in her hand, hovering over the paper.
I don't know what I'm doing, she finally said. I know that people are in danger, but I love him. I don't want to leave.
The king won't let anyone die, Elise offered comfortingly. But people already have died. Chris wasn't argumentative, only worried. I just need to think about something else.
I bet Sylvia would have work for us, I offered.
Chris gave a single chuckle. I'm not that desperate. She put the tip of the pencil down, making a smooth curve across the page. It was a start. Everything will be fine, I'm sure of it. I rubbed my eyes, looking at my music. I needed to switch things up. I'm going to hop over to one of the libraries. I'll be right back. Elise and Chris each gave me a cursory nod as they attempted to focus on their tasks, and I stood to leave. I wandered down the hall to one of the rooms on the far end of the floor. There were a few books on those shelves I'd been wanting to read. The door of the parlor swung open quietly, and I realized I wasn't alone. Someone was crying. I searched for the source and found Celeste, hugging her knees to her chest, sitting on the wide perch of a windowsill. I felt immediately awkward. Celeste did not cry. Up until this moment, I hadn't even been sure she was capable. The only thing to do was leave, but as she wiped her eyes, she caught sight of me.
Ugh, she whined. What do you want?
Nothing, sorry. I was looking for a book.
Well, get it and go. You get everything you want anyway.
I stood there blankly for a moment, confused by her words. She heaved a sigh and pushed herself up from her seat. Snatching one of her many magazines, she flung the glossy pages at me, and I caught it clumsily.
See for yourself. Your little speech on the report pushed you over the top. They love you.
Her voice was angry, accusing, as if I'd planned this all along. I turned the magazine right side up, finding half of the page full of pictures of the four remaining girls, with a graph beside our photos. Above the image, an elegant headline asked, "Who do you want as queen?" Next to my face, a wide line shot out, showing 39% of the people were pulling for me. It wasn't as high as I thought it should be for whoever won, but it was much higher than the others. Quotes from those polled edged the graph, saying that Celeste was positively regal, though she was in third. Elise was so poised, it said, but she also only had 8% of the population pulling for her. By my picture, were opinions that made me want to cry. Lady America is just like the Queen. She's a fighter. It's more than wanting her. We need her. I stared at the words.
Is this real?
Celeste snatched back the magazine.
Of course it's real. So go ahead, marry him or whatever. Be princess. Everyone will love it. The sad little five gets a crown.
She started walking away, her sour mood ruining the most incredible news I'd gotten during the entirety of this election.
You know, I don't even see why this matters so much to you.
Some very happy two is going to marry you anyway. And you're still going to be famous when this is over, I accused.
As a has-been, America.
You're a model, for goodness sake, I yelled. You've got everything.
But for how long? She shot back.
Then quieter.
How long?
What do you mean? I said, my voice becoming softer. Celeste, you're beautiful. You're a two for the rest of your life. She was shaking her head before I was even done speaking.
You think you're the only one who's ever felt trapped by your caste?
Yes, I'm a model. I can't sing, I can't act. So when my face isn't good enough anymore, they're going to forget all about me. I've got maybe 5 years left. 10 if I'm lucky. She stared at me.
You've spent your whole life in the background. I can see you miss it sometimes.
Well, I've spent mine in the spotlight.
Maybe it's a stupid fear to you, but it's real for me. I don't want to lose it.
That makes sense, actually.
Yeah?
She dabbed under her eyes, gazing out the window. I walked over and stood beside her.
Yeah. But, Celeste, did you ever even like him?
She tilted her head to the side, thinking.
He's cute, and a great kisser, she added with a smile.
I grinned back.
I know.
I know you do. That was a serious blow to my plan when I found out how far you two had gone. I thought I had him in the palm of my hand, making him dream about the possibility of more.
That's no way to get to someone's heart.
I didn't need his heart, she confessed. I just needed him to want me enough to keep me.
Fine, it's not love. I need the fame more than I need the love.
For the first time, she wasn't my enemy. I understood that now. Yes, she was conniving when it came to the competition, but that was her being desperate. She simply felt she had to intimidate us out of something that most of us wanted, but that she felt she needed.
First of all, you do need the love. Everyone does. And it's okay to want that right along with the fame.
She rolled her eyes but didn't interrupt.
Second of all, the Celeste Newsome I know doesn't need a man to get fame.
She laughed out loud at that.
I have been a bit vicious, she said, more playful than ashamed.
You ripped my dress.
Well, at the time I needed it.
And suddenly all of it was funny. All the arguing, the wicked faces, the little tricks. They felt like a really long joke. We stood there for a minute, laughing over the past few months, and I found myself wanting to look after her the way I did Marley. Surprisingly, her laughter faded away quickly, and she averted her eyes as she spoke.
I've done so many things, America. Horrible, shameful things. Part of it was not reacting well to the stress of this, but mostly it was because I was ready to do anything to get that crown, to get to Maxon.
I was a little shocked as I watched my hand rise up to pat her on the shoulder.
Honestly, I started, I don't think you need Maxon to get anything you want out of life. You've got the drive, the talent, and probably most importantly, you've got the ability. Half of the country would give anything to have what you have.
I know, she said. It's not that I'm completely unaware of how lucky I am. It's just